Today's episode is brought to you by Belulu Studios. Belulu Studios is a small event space located at 3131 Bull Street. For more information, visit belulustudios.com/eventspace. That's B-U-L-U-L-U studios.com/eventspace. Hello, this is Kevin. Thank you for listening to The Strand. Recently, I had the opportunity to meet up with Will at the Laney Contemporary in Savannah, Georgia. This is Will's second exhibition there, and it is titled Nothing to Fear. It is currently on view until March 23rd. He will give an artist talk at Laney on March 21st from 6:30 to 7:30. For more information about this exhibition, please visit laneycontemporary.com or willpenny.com. Will and I are participating in a couple of future group exhibitions. The first is at Artfields in Lake City, South Carolina, from April 26th through May 4th. The second group exhibition is at the Light and Sound Festival in Savannah, Georgia, on May 22nd and 23rd. This exhibition also features the works of Marcus Kenny, Todd Schroeder, Abby Portner, Greg Finger, and Josh Alexander. Hey, Will, thank you for giving me some time today. We're at the Laney Contemporary where you're show is currently on view. It's really exciting stuff, and I just wanted to thank you up front for letting me have a little bit of time to talk about it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Can you just up front tell everybody where they can find you online?
Yeah. So my work online, I have my website, of course, which is just willpenny.com. And I'm also on Instagram. I try my best to kind of keep things updated on there at Will Penny Art.
Great. Okay. So as I mentioned, we're at your show at Laney. When does it, how long is it up till?
This exhibition's up until March 23rd.
March 23rd. And what's the title of it?
Nothing to Fear.
And can you expand on why you chose that and how it ties to the work that you're making?
Yeah. The process of this exhibition and figuring out how everything fit together was kind of a unique one for me, because a lot of the time in works past, I started with a concept and tried to kind of build the work around that. But everything was kind of free flowing with this exhibition, where I had a lot of ideas pinned to the wall on post-its that were from a ton of different sources. And one of the things that kept coming up was kind of trying to approach or challenge myself to think about fear and anxiety and risk taking or risk aversion. And what seemed like the best way to go back through that was addressing some of the formative experiences from my adolescence of thinking about my own visual tendencies, the things that I like. I'm also like in the stage of figuring out some middle-aged things that mm-hmm. has made sense to go back through, like the nostalgia engine of like all of the pieces and parts of things that kind of make up who I am and what I do. And trying to think about those things in relation to my work was a new challenge, and was trying to give myself also permission, where I used to kind of second guess and question a lot of those things, but now I'm really just trying to say, you know, full steam ahead, like, let's go. There was a lot of entendres in the title of just like not being worried, trying not to have too much anxiety, trying not to second guess myself too much, overanalyze the things that I was doing. So all that kind of factored into, you know, building that into the title and kind of an overarching theme through the show too.
And it was based on, was it the 90s, No Fear?
Yes. So that kind of came after I like settled on the theme, was I was pulling a lot of sources from apparel, old kind of clothes and like vintage clothes that were found, t-shirts and sweatshirts, and also thinking about the aesthetic of those. And one of the ones that kept coming up was like just the kind of presence of the No Fear brand mm-hmm. when I was maybe like sixth or seventh grade, and how it was essential that you had one of those t-shirts, but also they were like aggressively wear this like attitude on your sleeve that was confrontational, but also the idea of thinking about like extreme sports and like what it, you know, just don't worry about it. Do a kickflip, like jump off that thing. Like you can't be hurt. There's no consequence, everything. And that like permission of youth where like, you don't worry about those things. It's no big mm-hmm. deal. But how little of that I've given myself over time mm-hmm. and getting like older and older, thinking, you know, why do I have so much buildup of apprehension kind of was like relating back to that brand. So it made sense to style the some of the design, like things around the exhibition promotional materials were borrowed from looking at that logo and thinking about the aesthetic. And that all kind of factored into like a lot of the works too, of why like this was like a formative aesthetic that informed my work and who I am and how I can kind of dig that back out.
So we're sitting in the mirror room, which is a unique space at Laney Contemporary. And I've lived in Savannah for maybe 2 years or so. And I think each exhibit that I've experienced at Laney, it's always like a challenge, or it's exciting to see what the artist is going to do in that space. And I love what you did in it. I'm trying to think of, like you mentioned, anxiety and crossing those bridges whenever you, maybe is it when you're making the work also, because the paintings that are in the mirror room, they feel like they're just, you just went free form and with little anxiety. Was there stress like to make the work, or is it like really methodical? And what does that world look like when you're making the work?
Yeah, this is an interesting space to be in talking about the exhibition, because I was thinking like a linear path of trying to curate the work and different stitch together different series of work along a path, because I wanted there to be a loose narrative that wasn't this is the story and this is how it unfolds, but there to be breadcrumbs or Easter eggs throughout that connect back to the theme. And all of the works are unified through that, where there's a little bit of components in one different body of work, a little bit in another. Specifically in this space, like it's one of the most challenging and interesting spaces I've ever kind of had to install anything in. And it's the second time I've had an exhibition in this space and thought like, you know, what am I going to do in there? I want to activate it, but there's architecture in here, mirrors, this like crazy vinyl bar, there's seating.
Mirrors on the ceiling.
Yeah. Like it has like its own kind of aura about it. And I've seen so many shows in here that is always like, oh, that's an interesting take on how you, and even leading up to exhibition, people are like, I'm curious to see like what you're going to do with the mirrored rooms. Like, yeah, it's a crazy space. And the works that are hanging they were methodical in a way, but there also was a lot of chance, because a lot of the works that are on the wall in here involve a new process that I tried to kind of work through that involves hydro transfers, where you can print custom graphics on a film that you can transfer via like a water bath onto an object. It's usually used for things like if you wanted to put like camouflage on a gun butt, or put like flaming skulls on a motorcycle helmet, you can dip a part through a bath and let the graphics just adhere and stretch and kind of conform to the object. And I tried to do it like 10 years ago and it didn't work because like the technology wasn't there yet. And I recently tried it again, but a lot of things went wrong because it's such a fugitive, difficult process. But I was really happy to see the distress and the things that kind of happened out of it that were something I couldn't control. And there's a lot of works in this exhibition where there is intention and a design and a hope, mm-hmm. but I do have to let go and say these chemicals or these agents or these different adhesives may do what I want them to. And I kind of have a picture in my mind, but I have to step back and then look at it once it comes out of the process and say, you know, that's enough. And to be surprised is kind of nice, because it is a risk to gather these things, to like do many steps to get them fabricated and made, and then just kind of
throw it to chance.
Yeah. And then see like, and I really enjoyed that in this exhibition, because usually I don't give myself that permission to fail. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I keep trying to remind myself, like failure is good. And there's works that were stepping stones to get to a certain point with these. And all of that had to come through different processes and trial and error to get to a point that's like, yeah, I like that. And I may not like that work later when I get some distance from it, but then little things emerge that are like, oh, and I like hope to try to capitalize on those things later. Like that's now in my toolkit. I know some expectation of what happens.
So there's a lot of process that you do in ahead of time. And then once you go to apply the medium onto the substrate, that's when you're just letting it rip kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And hoping for the best.
Yeah.
Because I test things at different scales, mm-hmm. and some of these works are pretty large, and I like that's part of something I've come to realize in my practice over time too, that if I repeat myself in actions too often, like I don't want it to be so controlled that I know exactly what's going to happen, because then there's no surprise. Like, it does what it does. Yeah. And seeing how these things fit is fun for me, because then I can be a little bit surprised myself when something comes out of it and look at it and take some time and consider it and process it. So that was an important part of the show, leaving question marks and trying to kind of throw things at the wall and see what stuck. And so for a lot of the things that I think are successful about certain works, there's a lot of stuff that was left on the studio floor that was like, that didn't work. That was just how you get there. And that's, you know, I think it is
maybe it'll evolve in the future into something else. Or
It's a controlled experiment, and you never, you know, you have to try and then see whether it works or not. And then, but it's not fully like everything's wide open. Just be like, there's intention in what I'm hoping for it to do, but also trying to leave space that it could be something that's like, oh man, like, look at that.
Yeah. So makes sense. So we mentioned the mirror room. It has paintings in it. It has plastic lights hanging from the ceiling, and that kind of gives like an infinity effect throughout the space. But if I'm correct, their paintings are upstairs, and then downstairs, it seems like everything's digital to some capacity, right? Is that?
There's a bit of mixing. There's some works downstairs that we kind of curated things in a way where there's like samples of different series of work, where there's some paintings on found vintage t-shirts throughout. There's works that use the hydro transfer method and a mix of painting using acrylic paints through a spray gun, but also painted by hand. There's geometric relief panels, there's a bit of like sculptural relief in some of the works. And then downstairs, there's a series of works that involve virtual reality, projection mapping and video, also some sculpture with LED fans, and some kind of like interactive motion sensing work too with sound.
How did you come up with the concept for the LED fans?
Those were kind of a weird, I just happened to have like all the pieces lying around. The first time I found one of those LED fans, I just like came across it online and thought like, oh, that's kind of a cool thing. I was doing research on holograms because I had worked on a project where I was making old school Pepper's Ghost style, like Disney holograms for a client. And I was like trying to look at all the options for how you could build a hologram. And I saw all these really fancy, sophisticated LED fans where you can have like a graphic that looks, and a lot of artists have used them in really interesting ways. But then I found this really sad, like 8-bit programmable one online that was like, ooh, it just has like an extendable kind of like USB outlet and this like limited color, it can only do text. And I got one just kind of as a gift for a friend and programmed like some silly messages on it. Mm-hmm. And thought like, you know, when I was playing with it, it just had this feel of a flower. And I kept thinking it was like a couple years ago, and I kept thinking, I want to do something with that. And that led me to thinking about a vessel to contain it. And the thing that seemed like it made sense at the time was finding these vintage porcelain tchotchkes that were all of them were pretty much scoured from eBay or antique stores, where I was like, there's a look of particular ones that I'm trying to find that reminded me of like growing up, being like babysat by my grandparents and just like sitting there, like looking at these things and questioning like why would anyone want these objects? Like, they seem impersonal and banal, but like they also have a lot of character. And so that became the vase or the vessel for the flower. And then they went through a process of getting coated with silver nitrate because I wanted to add something on top of the kind of paint job and glazing that they had. And it was something to personalize them, but also kind of mess them up a little bit, but also catch light and reflect in the dark space. And then finally the fans got programmed with song lyrics from a lot of the kind of aggressive alt rock music that I was listening to in the 90s, because I was thinking back to the space of like, why the tchotchkes? And it was really like the space as a kid, like sitting in my grandparents' kitchen, listening to music on my CD player because I didn't have a phone and there was nothing on TV. And so I just would sit there and brood and listen to music. And I was listening to like Nine Inch Nails and Nirvana and Green Day and soaking in like all this angst.
Anxiety, like the angst.
Yeah. It was like a weird space because like if I lifted my headphones, it would just be so aggressive. But I was in this like really kind of like kitschy weird spot. That reminds me of like, even just sitting in this like mirrored room, like there's a dated feel to it that reminds me of being in that space. That was a lot of time, and it was just meditative time. And I don't, like, that's where I went. Mm-hmm. And so there was just kind of excavating something that called or had like signifiers to like that time and place that I really don't think give enough space to day by day, thinking about like what came out of that, like mm-hmm. why, like, and how does that relate to me now?
Yeah. What's the name of those pieces?
Each one is named for the song that's, I basically pulled like a few kind of like bars or lyrics like out of each song that seemed like it would fit with the format of the text. Mm. So each one is the name of the song from each artist that's on there. And some of them ended up really simple. Like there's one from Bush that's just Breathe In, Breathe Out from Machine Head.
Yeah.
And that was like kind of a fun one to think about because it's also like this affirmation that's just reminding yourself to breathe, even though I remember like listening to that song and thinking, like identifying with it so clearly at the time that it was popular, that it was an anthem that was me like discovering myself and finding myself as a young person.
Yeah. That makes sense. So there goes the so.
You get like an earworm from that one for sure. Like any, there's like Green Day in there. Like there's Nine Inch Nails, like all of it's just like thumping, like pulsing.
Yeah.
Like once, and I would like go through these things. Yeah. Like, and, but that's something I've been trying to unpack more for some weird reason while making the show. All I really wanted to listen to was like 90s rock and kept going through like, and it seemed like it was powering me through like long hours and trying to make things where it's like, yes, like this is the like audio caffeine that I need to like, but it felt strange because it's like going through a time period that I don't go to all the, like I'm not that person like constantly like reliving back through stuff that like I have a nostalgia for these things. Like it just seemed like the right time to excavate back in that time.
It sounds like you're maybe looking to the past and thinking of the future in this work, right? Just sitting where your life is these days and how you got there and where you want to go.
Yeah. And I think that's something that I'm trying to like carve out more space for too, is thinking of my own experiences to borrow from, because I feel like I've gone through a long period of my own like career and work where it was very much designed for an audience and for consideration of the viewer, other people. And I didn't give myself a lot of room, I think, to go back through what it means to me and why. And because it's hard, I think that ends up feeling kind of narcissistic sometimes, where like, well, you know, it's, everything is a portrait of the artist, like as they make it, but really like confronting more about how that relates and why. And it's an odd thing because it doesn't feel at first like it is actually that pressing or that important. Like it feels like there's bigger things to do than to really like tunnel back through yourself. But it's been helpful, I think, to for me to try to confront things that maybe are small traumas or maybe are just marks or memories or little things that have stuck, even like the embarrassing moments of going through growing up that are like, oh man, like I'm never going to forget that.
Yeah.
And they're all tied to like these instances of trying on different clothes or trying to put on a costume or how you present. And like, that was the time I think the most that I was going through phases of what is that for me? Like, who am I in relation to media and culture and place as I'm growing up?
Right on. You mentioned some of the symbols that are spread throughout the work. Do you want to share some of those, the Easter eggs, and is that stuff that you talk about, or is it more of a...
Yeah, it's a tricky one to try to kind of condense, because in my process of trying to build the work, there is so much that is swirling around that's kind of notes and samples. Like I think about music a lot with sampling different sounds. Like you could take this riff, or you could take this beat, or you could take, you know, even a lyric, and you can reconfigure it, and it just becomes part of the makeup of something new. And maybe you recognize it because it's really on the surface, it's a cover, it's kind of more blatant, or it's just like a touch, this like small touch. And a lot of the things I was sampling in this exhibition are either kind of graphics or images or things that have accumulated over time that are like, why do these particular color palettes come up? Why are these like plastic owls floating in this space? One of the ones, or one of the themes that kind of popped up early on was trying to find a Sasquatch in Hunting Island State Park in South Carolina, because last year there was a sighting in August, and all my friends were like messaging me constantly. They're like, have you seen this? Cause they like, no, I have a particular penchant for like anything paranormal or cryptozoological. And I was like, yeah, this is crazy. Cause we don't normally get this, like in this region, you'd have to travel to find, you know, Bigfoot hotspots.
Pacific Northwest. Probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, hot spot.
And I don't know like why the subject is of interest to me is like a whole nother thing. And I could go on about like why, you know, aliens and ghost stories and folklore and mythology is particularly interesting to me. But for this project, I just had this idea of trying to go to that site and try to make a project about venturing there and looking for a Sasquatch and how that could be relayed or conveyed in the media that I had. So it made sense to go out there. Well, this was kind of like a random idea when it was like, well, I could keep it really simple and take out some recording equipment and just record a certain amount of time in a space and bring that back in so that you could kind of look through and see where this happened. Because otherwise you have like stories, like firsthand accounts, or you have reporting on websites, or you have weird like reality TV shows on Discovery that like go on a hunt that's sometimes hard to watch.
Yeah.
So I just went there with a 360 camera and set it up in the location where the sighting was and recorded 24 hours of video that is then looping on a VR headset. So you can put on the VR headset and stand in a fixed position and look around where the Sasquatch sighting was. And it seemed like in that space, there's as much potential to like find a Bigfoot as to not.
Yeah.
And you could analyze all the video and look at all directions and listen, and it's there as a possibility. And just presenting something like that back was something that was not usually like a project in my practice, but yeah. I'm trying to embrace that more and more where it just fits yeah. the medium. And I've always struggled with VR because for years, I'm like, what am I going to do with VR? Like I keep playing with it, but everything felt really forced. Like I was trying to cram my aesthetic or things that I was doing in 3D programs into this box of interactivity. So it was kind of a fun project to learn a lot of things because it was surprisingly difficult to execute, to record 24 hours straight of 6K video.
Did you camp out there or did you?
Yeah, I was kind of babysitting off camera, keeping like an eye on the gear, because leading up to it, it was all run on like a battery pack. So I had to find the right camera and SD card combination to record.
Yeah.
All this, which is, it was a terabyte of video. The whole video is 1 terabyte total, which is kind of a lot of data.
Right.
And, it was battery powered. So I had to find the right travel battery to run it for 24 hours.
A power pack or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I like dug a hole and like buried that in the ground. It was really? On a monopod.
To conceal it.
Yeah. So, cause when you look down, you can see everything. So I had to kind of do a little bit of sight dressing to like put some leaves over top of the hole I dug. And, but the idea is to make it just as seamless as possible where it's just going to run on the loop and you could go in and look at it and things change as time of day changes and
shadows and light and all that good stuff.
And weird, like you could hear things or see things. And I haven't watched every pixel of video across the whole thing because it would take forever, but I have listened to the entire video and I have heard some nighttime rustlings at like 3 a.m. in there that are like, what was that?
The Sasquatch.
I never know because it's totally pitch black. Like all you can see is the moon.
Yeah.
But you can hear something like just, and it could be a deer. It's pretty loud. Like it sounds big. So there could have been an encounter.
Who knows?
But I don't know.
Yeah.
The Bigfoot one is a strange there's just a lot of weird space there for that one. And that like came up a couple times in the exhibition too. Like just the talking fish that's downstairs.
That's
it kind of circles back around in a couple ways where the talking fish is kind of based on a project that I did last year that involved hacking a big mouth billy bass as a AI chat GPT chatbot. So you could talk to the fish, and the fish was just the vessel with which you could access voice to text through chat GPT.
And that was a Green Truck Pub, downtown Savannah. And it's run by Sulphur Studios, I think, right?
Art Southeast and Sulphur Studios, and was on display for the summer. And it was a surprisingly more ambitious project than I thought it was going to be, because it was just one of those late night ideas. I was like, wouldn't it be cool to combine the hardware part of the talking fish and hack it to be the actual like microphone speaker? But then if you were to talk to it, like what would it be accessing? And it just seemed
like... You nailed it. I was so excited to see that.
It was, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ups and downs. And I definitely at the start of the project, I was like, what have I done? Like, this is way out of my wheelhouse. Like I bit off more than I could chew. And
but even the way you managed that, like, I remember the heat was kind of giving you issues.
Yeah.
But you just put sticker or signs up and said, you know,
I had to make like apologies when it wasn't working and figure out like the troubleshooting, which it's one of those things where I think like I have a penchant for picking up projects that are more ambitious, or like I always forget this like extra 25% of time and budget that I often don't account for. That's like sometimes
I think that's normal.
Well, when it's something new, like you, it's really hard to account for that. And then I keep
thinking, you don't want to do that when you're making things. Like if you are constantly looking at numbers and budget and all these things, that's not a way to
create, I think, you know? There's like an elegance when you can do something effectively and you're like, oh yes, like that's how I, and for certain things, like it feels nice to be able, but then other times I can only do that so much before I need to throw some new challenge in there. It's like, what if, and then I can take those things and learn and build. And I'm still troubleshooting that project because there's still, it constantly evolves, because working with AI is a constant evolution of keeping up with how it works and what you can do with it. And it feels like it's something that is, it's kind of like, I went through the same thing with NFTs for a time where I was thinking like, I would like to do something, but I have to kind of take my time and make sure I'm not just rushing into a technology to just use it for sake of using it.
Yeah.
I want it to be something that addresses, first I have to learn about it, which is a big curve because I went to school for painting. So like, I don't know a lot of this stuff, and like learning programming and learning certain program languages and learning how it works, like, is a lot of time.
What were some of the parameters that you had in place? What was the name of that at Green Truck? What was the name of that piece?
That installation was called Small Talk.
Small Talk.
And it was really just a chance to try to put AI at the forefront of, can we use this conversationally? Because that was something I was trying, like testing out, just asking ChatGPT questions, which like typing, it's nice. Like I use it in a ton of different ways. A lot of people I've been talking with are using it in ways it's a very powerful tool and is helpful day by day for certain things. But then making it something that's conversational, making it a little more human and personable, is something that it has the power to do, but we don't always have the interface. So the most absurd interface seem like a talking novelty fish. Sure. Like, and it, you know, it's that great. That part was not difficult to like hack the fish and, you know, put in some hardware that made it work. The hard part's making the engine and making like all the things that access network resources from voice to text, text to voice. And
then back heat and forth. Was an issue. I remember.
Yeah. Wi-Fi, like connect, all that stuff. And then like the fun thing about projects like this is as the technology evolves, I get to learn and try to respond and adapt too. And it's very like specialized knowledge of a certain thing that now it's like recording 24 hours of 6K 360 video is not something I thought I'd ever really need to know very well, but it took weeks to actually troubleshoot that to get it correct. It's like, you never know. Like, the weird things that pop up that are acquired knowledge, that's like, these are my, now the things that I could share. If someone's ever like, I'm trying to do this really weird specific thing with a tool, like, okay, I got you.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that I appreciate about you as being, as an artist, is you're so curious and you're not, no fear, I guess that's where that applies. I didn't think about that, but it seems like you're curious and then you respond to that curiosity in many different areas. And that's something that it's exciting to watch you make stuff.
The learning part is fun. Like I, you know, I do like the lifelong learners like slung around, which I think is cool, and but like is also a big catch-all for what you get out of the process of trying to acquire knowledge. And I throw around like research as a term a lot with some of the things that I do, but how you quantify certain types of research is interesting because it may just be trying to figure out like reverse engineer this one weird little thing. Like, how does that work? And, you know, several days later, I like go home and it's like, what did you do today? Like, I'm just trying to,
I looked at a fish, from the 90s for 8 hours.
I had this setback, like I had soldered everything and plugged it in and then it just broke. And now I don't know what I'm like. Then you get in that moment. It's like, what am I doing? And then you have to dig yourself out of it. And
then you wake up at like 3 a.m. with the answer. Oh, and then
this exhibition had me up in the middle of the night, the most out of any exhibition I've done. And it was just wheels turning because I'm pretty good at functioning on very little sleep. Like I was trained over time to work a lot of jobs and like try to just really micromanage my time. But I had time on this one. It was just things were coming up that were unresolved. And I'd wake up at 4 a.m. and I'd just sit there for like hours. Like, okay, if I do, it's in that weird space where like, do I get up and go to the studio and just go, or like, I really want sleep.
So you just lay there for 3 hours and the wheels just keep churning.
I swear, like, it's like, doing like dream journaling or something. Like I'd wake up and think, okay, I have to try this out the next day, and would like write a post-it and think about that. And some of them were good at it. Some of them materialized and became part of the exhibition. Some of them were like, no, that's not going to work.
Yeah. I think I share a little bit of that. Like I set probably unrealistic goals, you know, for what I want to achieve, and then just try to work my way to solve those problems. And some of it, like you said, ends up on the floor and you don't look at it for a while, but maybe you revisit it. But
I think it can be one of those, it's thinking about too the things that you yourself gravitate towards when you go to exhibitions or go to see shows or think about the draw. And to me, ambition and scope is always one of those things where you find something new, which is always seems more and more difficult to do, is to make something that someone hasn't seen or that seems like it occupies a space that's, this is a new consideration or a new perspective or a new voice or something we haven't seen that challenges you to reconsider your relationship to it. Or just also the idea of driving someone else to try to like push a little harder or do, you know, do better or consider their own work is, I think, a good space to be in for anybody, because then, you know, we're pushing whatever we're doing in our own little worlds. Like we're still kind of trying to push things forward and not feeling hopefully too stuck, because that's within your control. You can kind of build it. You can shape it. You can dream real big. You can try to test your limits and see what happens. Even if it's just trying to make something that seems, you know, like why make that in the first place? Or what is that for? Like, I would second guess myself over and over and over again in just shutting ideas down or thinking that's unattainable. You can't do that. You don't have the resources to do that. Why would you do that? No one would want to support or acquire that.
Yeah.
You know, and which is part of the metrics of figuring out how you make things and why and where it goes, is it has to live somewhere somehow. But like, granting yourself the permission to engage with those things can be very difficult.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so we've talked about the current exhibit that's at Laney. We've broken down a little bit of the why that you've made the pieces. Do you have anything on the horizon that you want to talk about?
Yeah, there's a few things kind of coming up that I'm kind of working on and developing. I'm really trying to go hunting for residency and grant applications to find new ways of support. It's something that I haven't carved out a lot of time for in the past because out of school, I was always working, and any vacation time or off time was just working in the studio or write-offs for certain work travel.
That's exciting. That's
exciting
to hear that you're doing that.
Yeah, because it was something that I always wanted to do, but just really like, it's one of those things where you can make it work, but it was tough because my My experience working as an artist here in the United States has been a challenge since grad school because I'm an immigrant and I've had to deal with certain visas and certain statuses and maintaining a job. And this is the first time in my career I've had a little more freedom from that to try to really focus on this is what's best for me and my work. But I'm going to Art Fields in Lake City, South Carolina. Awesome.
Yeah, I'll see you there.
I'm excited because I've never applied. I know it's been a really cool thing that keeps building, but this year I'm taking Billy, the rebound bass.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like that would be, that's the kind of project that feels like would be one that I want to take. So I'm in the next month or so, I'm completely rebuilding him with a new computer to make him a little bit faster and higher performing.
So do you have multiple ones?
There's just one, but he's the one that he's now had two installations where he was all summer in the drive-through box, taking all that heat. And then he was just at the Pulse Art and Technology Festival at the Jepson Center. So I got to kind of test him back out again for that. And I've learned some things seeing like how ChatGPT is upgraded and some of the new things where I just want him to be that much faster and more conversational. So a project that I thought was like, this is just a one-time project, this is it, is now being upgraded and turbo boosted with a new computer to see if I can make it better.
Yeah. Is it learning from your audience?
It's kind of like the process, I think, of working with building software or interactive anything is kind of debugging through what works and what doesn't. And it's interesting because you can make a static work like a painting or a sculpture and you put it out and you don't often bring it back to modify it or update it. Usually it just like goes up, which I'm terrible at. If something comes back to me in the studio, I will repurpose it. I'll repaint it. I'll take it out of inventory and then be like, all right, I've looked at it too long. I need to switch it up. So this is why I don't hang like any of my own work in my house, because if I look at it, I get restless and I want to change it.
Grab a paintbrush.
Yeah. So whatever. I have to like put it in crates and like hide it away in the back of the studio, or I will just grab it off the wall and be like, all right, this is, but with technology, you kind of need to do that because this stuff keeps changing, and how it evolves with that is interesting, because usually a lot of work that's in collections, like it just stays archived. And the goal of conservators is to keep it working. And think like Nam June Paik or somebody like that, where you have to find these old TVs that match. They can't just put it on a new LCD display. So preserving it looking like it was a TV from a certain era is a challenge. But for me, like it comes back and it's like, how do I make this a little better? And we have new tools. These things are updated. The software is a little better.
So you have new software, you have a new computer, same fish.
Yeah.
It's all going up to Art Fields. That's cool.
And I would, there's things that I wanted to do with him originally that I couldn't do because the technology wasn't there or the conditions weren't right for it. So that's one of the cool things about these projects now, is if it's indoors and I don't have to deal with it being 110 degrees out,
humid and all that garbage.
Yeah. Then things can improve. And so it's weird little things that are just more ideal conditions for pushing like how to, and it's weird because my brain wants to like go on to the next project. It's like, what do I do next? But there still seems like so much room to kind of keep tinkering and make it better, whatever that is. And it may just be like noticing that there was a lag where at certain points in time through behavior, I realized this is what's wrong. You know, and this happens all the time with software development. We like use an application or a website and realize like, oh, people keep clicking this. That's bad UI. We need to change it. And I don't think we usually have that feedback in space in a gallery, because, you know, sometimes you get to hear from people what they think, or you get to talk with them about it, but really seeing how something performs through documentation and archiving and through just observation is just handy feedback.
It's exciting. I think it's that piece. I'm glad to see that you're continuing to evolve it and work on it. I think it resonates with everybody. Like, well, maybe 30 plus year olds that remember it, and it's nostalgic and clever.
It was definitely like same space of permission. Had to think like this isn't something I would normally do. It was definitely an outlier project because when I thought about the installation originally, it's like that would never have been a thing that would have crossed my mind as a thing to do. But it was
shocked too, but I didn't like, I was all for it. Like, yeah. This is exciting.
No one was like, why? Like, why are you doing this? It was just like, okay. Like, yeah, you're doing that. Great. Like, all right. And so, you know, that space I think is the fun space to try to push. Like, if I can humor those questions for myself and share it and it works, then yeah. Awesome.
Great. Thanks, Will, for spending some time with me. It was exciting to learn more about your work. And I don't know. I can't wait to see where you go in the future.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was great.